Welcome to a special edition of Path to Zero, the podcast about clean energy and the journey toward a low-carbon future. We've traveled to New York City to take part in Climate Week conversations. Now, here's your host, Tucker Perkins.
Climate Week brings together an impressive group of energy industry leaders from across the world, including our guest for this episode. I'm excited today to be joined by James Rockall, CEO of the World LP Gas Association, where he's worked for 20 years. James has a strong global energy and business development background, having worked 9 years for Shell International in the Netherlands and Venezuela. James, so glad to have you here on Path to Zero. Welcome to New York and Climate Week, but especially welcome to Path to Zero.
Thank you, Tucker. It's a pleasure to be back in New York. I love the place. So shame about the rain, but apart from that, it's good.
That's just all part of the package. I know you're on your way to some other meetings. We'll talk about that a little bit. But first, let's talk about the World LP Gas Association. Tell our listeners what it is, the history, maybe what you do.
Okay, so the World LPG Association is what we now call it. It's about 35 years old. And essentially, its role is to promote the use of LPG across the world. And we do that by bringing together the industry. We have about 300 organizations operating in over 125 countries. We share knowledge, we share best practices, but we also do a lot of work at trying to influence key influencers. You know, groups like the World Bank, the UN, big media, national governments in some cases. And essentially, that's our role. It's a trade association for our sector, and I would say it's a unique body. There's nothing else like the WLPJ in the world, so it's important.
You know, I've been with you. I was trying to remember. I've probably been with you 15 years or so in some capacity, following you, and I've seen a lot of the work we've done in Indonesia and certainly through Africa. I've met with you in many of those places. Talk about some of your past projects and some of your past successes.
Well, I think one of the things that we've been really proud of is the ability to influence governments to create a positive policy environment for LPG. And it's not always easy. You got to make sure that you understand what's in it for them. Why would a government support LPG? So you need to do the background research. You need to understand the impact that LPG can have on certain policy portfolios, like health, like gender equality. There's a whole range of them. So we do our background. We reach out to the governments, and if we're successful, we persuade them that they put the right policies in place. And you know, you mentioned Indonesia. We had fantastic success in Indonesia. It must have been about 10 years ago now, where people were basically using kerosene to cook. And it was highly subsidized. And it made no economic sense. And it made no CO2 sense. So the government put in a plan to switch people from kerosene to LPG. And they did that within a period of really just a couple of years. And they switched about 250 million people, almost the entire population of Indonesia, from kerosene, which they then sold as jet fuel at a far higher price, and they switched them to LPG, and they saved an enormous amount of carbon and money.
As you talk about Indonesia, which was really, it was an important thing for me to view and see, both, you know, as we talked about the policy, then we talked about the on-the-ground work, and then finally to see the results. To really understand that, I got to walk you right over to Africa, because one of the most exciting things I think I've ever been associated with is, in fact, Cooking for Life.
Yeah.
Talk to us about that program.
Well, Cooking for Life was basically predicated on the fact that almost half the planet doesn't have access to clean energy. And it's about 3 billion people, okay? I think the population of the planet's a little bit more than 6, but you know what I'm saying. It's a lot of people in the world who do not have access to clean energy. And LPG, for many of them, is not just the ideal solution. Apart from burning wood, it's pretty much the only solution. These people are never going to be able to switch to electricity. They're never going to be able to switch to natural gas. So when it comes to modern clean energy, LPG is really the only solution. So we set about trying to address this gap of 3 billion people. And we said, really, what's a reasonable target for us to do? And we said, a billion. Let's switch a billion people. This was back in 2014. And we said, let's do it by 2030. And essentially we went through the same process. And the Indonesia story that I told you was actually the first part of that Cooking for Life journey. But the biggest part was India. And we had strong contact with the Indian government. And when we started, the penetration in rural India was 25%. I mean, 75% of people were collecting wood or burning dung or burning kerosene. And if you just put that in perspective, rural India has the same population as the European Union, the United States, and Canada, all combined. So talk about market opportunities here. You've got a pretty large country, but nonetheless, it's fairly concentrated. And 75% of them were not consumers. So anyway, cut a long story short, we persuaded the government and the industry to put in certain policies and certain investments. And after 3 to 4 years, we now say that it's basically 99% access, which is over 500 million people now have access to LPG who didn't before. And if you look at the if you look at the statistics, you're basically avoiding 500,000 premature deaths year on year because these people are not using polluting fuels anymore. So for me, to be honest, it's what gets me out of bed in the morning to go to work. It's this kind of knowledge. This is what we can do.
And still a lot of work to be done, because if I remember the number, it's not far from 3 million, 2.5 to 3 million people a year die or are severely impacted by indoor air pollution.
Absolutely. So it's about 3 million a year who die. To put that in context, that's more than the number of people who die every year from malaria, HIV/AIDS, and tuberculosis combined. And those three diseases attract about $25 billion of public funding every year to try to resolve them, to treat them. If we had 10% of that public sector investment in LPG, we could provide universal access to LPG
for amazing story
in the world. So that's what we're driving.
I was gonna come back to it, but I think I'll stay with it now, because we talk here in America quite a bit about environmental justice and really all of the implications. And I find the term is completely maligned myself, in that sometimes what I find to be horribly unjust is still based to be environmental justice. But here, talk to our listeners about the role propane has played in true environmental justice, mainly through Africa, as you move. Talk about the impact to the family as you move from cooking with charcoal or dung to cooking with LPG.
Well, I would say it absolutely environmental justice, but I think it's social justice. We call it energy justice, which kind of encapsulates all of that. And if you take that example of the family in Africa who moves from traditional fuel to LPG, it's normally the female part of the household. So it's the women and the girl children who collect wood. And it can take them 8 or 9 hours a day to collect wood, because the wood is not hanging around outside their house, because that's all gone. That went years ago. They have to trek 4 hours to get their wood and then 4 hours back.
Into inhospitable territory. Snakes, lizards,
absolutely.
Unfriendly people.
Into places that puts them at serious danger. Not just danger from snake bites and other things, but sexual violence as well for these girls. So it's a big problem. Those girls and women that are doing that, don't forget, they have no time for anything else. They can't get a job. They can't go to school. It's the boy children generally go to school, and the men who work, the women and the girls, collect wood. And once they've collected the wood, they get home, they set the fire alight. It takes a long time, because often the wood can be wet. And once the fire's burning, it maybe takes an hour, they cook. And then after they've cooked, which maybe lasts a couple of hours maximum, then the fire continues to burn for hours afterwards. And all the time, it's emitting smoke into their house. And not just into their house, these ladies often sit on the floor and cook. So their faces are right above the smoke. It's equivalent, I think, to 400 cigarettes an hour is the exposure they get from sitting in this wood. So, you know, even if they don't die prematurely, their health is dramatically impacted, and their opportunities, their social opportunities, their employment opportunities are
their educational
impacted.
Opportunities.
Their educational opportunities are impacted. So if they can move to LPG, you can just picture the impact that it can have on their life. This bottle is delivered to their doorstep. They connect the bottle, actually somebody connects it for them, and when they want to cook, they switch it on, they cook, they turn it off. There's no pollution in their home. There's no lost time. And I could go on for hours with stories about case studies of people who have been able to do productive work because they no longer have to collect wood. They can get into forestry and animal husbandry and all sorts of things, beekeeping. I've got these examples. And then people can get out of this poverty trap. They can earn a living, and then they can continue to buy modern energy, and so on and so forth. This is the social and environmental dimension of LPG.
Yeah, I love the story. I love being involved with it. And people can learn about that story from your website, right?
For sure.
You know, give them the website address?
Yeah, it's WLPGA.org.
Mm-hmm.
And
just a great place to
go. All the information, there's a lot of information there. Yeah.
Yeah, great place to learn. So as we talked about the developing countries, we've talked about that a bit. So I think most people can understand that LPG is quite a key ingredient, if you would, of the developing countries. But let's go now to talk about the developed countries. You live in France,
mm-hmm.
Clearly from another part of Europe.
Yeah.
You work with us here in the U.S. all the time. What's the role of propane or LPG in the developed world?
Well, the big advantage of propane or LPG is it's a portable fuel. It can basically go where grid-based energies can't. It can also go where grid-based energies go as well for certain applications, but I think that's its real unique value. It's a little bit like we call natural gas in a bottle. So even in the developed countries that you talk about, France as an example, in France, about a third of the people cook with natural gas, a third of the people cook with electricity, and a third of the people cook with LPG, because there's a lot of off-grid households still in France. I think in Europe, there's almost 20 million households which are off-grid, off-gas grid, and these people have no real opportunity to access clean gaseous fuels unless they use LPG. So it remains a very powerful option for big parts of Europe. You then have the transport side. The biggest consumption of LPG in Europe is for cars. It's bigger than cooking, it's bigger than heating, it's for cars. And the reason for this is it's low cost to convert an existing vehicle to LPG, and you can reduce your emissions enormously by going to LPG. You know, take the example, you have a cooker in your home, and you're happy to burn that stove and cook with it. It doesn't make your curtains smell. It doesn't make your clothes smell. Imagine if you ran a petrol engine in your kitchen and how your house would stink. Now, that's essentially the difference, and you can visualize the difference between LPG and gasoline. It's far, far cleaner. So there's a big opportunity in Europe for the transport side, and I think in the rest of the developed world, and so on and so forth. You have things like power generation, where you can have small units generating power, again, off-grid, and it's a fantastic clean option. You've got the hybrid opportunities when you bring in renewable power, but the sun doesn't always shine and the wind doesn't always blow, but you want to have uninterruptible energy, uninterruptible power, so you can have LPG as a clean backup for that renewable power, and we see that all over the world.
Excellent. That's good. And you're here at Climate Week. You know, Climate Week is here to talk about improving the earth, benefiting the climate. And yet you represent a fossil fuel, albeit perhaps a low-carbon, clean one, still a fossil fuel.
Mm-hmm.
What has brought you to Climate Week all the way from France? What are you here to talk about?
Well, first of all, I think it's important to say that we have been pushing the issue of climate and CO2 emissions since before Climate Week existed. So it's always been part of the value proposition of LPG compared to other fuels is it has lower CO2 emissions. So it's not that we're late to the party. You know, we began this party, if you like, years ago, because LPG has always been at the forefront of low carbon solutions, and it still is. All across the world, if you want to reduce your carbon impact, in many cases, a switch to LPG will achieve it. It's absolutely not the case in every situation. And clearly, when you have renewable electricity coming from genuinely renewable sources, there is a case for electricity, and I don't deny that. But there is also certainly a case for LPG, even in countries where you do have electricity. So the role that we have here in Climate Week is really to raise awareness of this, the fantastic role that LPG still has. And don't forget, half the planet doesn't have access to any kind of clean energy. But the other thing that we want to do is raise awareness of the renewable possibilities that we have with LPG. There's a lot of investment going on right now from the industry in a whole range of areas to try to further decrease the carbon dioxide impact of our fuel. And we want to talk about that. We want to find partners, we want to find investors, and we want to influence policymakers.
Excellent. Such a good story that's not been told well, but it seems to beginning to be told now. I know you're on your way to Canada from here, and you're going to be talking again with the Petroleum Council. Is that right?
The World Petroleum Congress.
And what will you be talking with them about?
Well, I'm in two sessions. I'm in one talking about circularity, so the role of how the gas industry basically can embrace the opportunities from the circular economy. That's very, very important when it comes to renewable fuels. And the other thing I'm going to look at is the journey to net zero for the gas industry and the natural gas liquids industry. So two separate panels.
And really, in my opinion, probably a story that we were ill prepared to discuss a decade ago, but today to be able to discuss the path to zero, the very name of this podcast, is very, very well documented. Don't you agree?
I think the path to zero generally is receiving a massive amount of attention. And personally, I think it's right that it receives attention. I'm absolutely fully agree that the activities of mankind is affecting the climate. And I think it's the duty of all of us to try to find ways to reduce that. So yeah, it's something we're working on.
Let me ask you one last question, then we'll have a little bit of fun too. But one of the things I often do is look to Europe, particularly Europe, about, you know, who've been ahead of us. You were ahead of us thinking about this, ahead of us in thinking about perhaps wind and solar. You've made a lot of right steps, and I think you've made a lot of backward steps. As you were to characterize the winds, if you will, in Europe and generally, for climate, for positive moves toward climate change, but ones that still didn't impact energy reliability or affordability. Any success stories over there you think you want to talk about?
I know it's quite controversial, but I think nuclear power has
France is certainly making a step, massive step forward in conventional nuclear, right? Not small modular, but but conventional big plants.
Absolutely. So if you take France, you take Scandinavia, we have extremely low emissions. Our electricity, I looked at it before I came here, 17 grams per kilowatt hour. If I looked at the Midwest in the States, it's maybe not the best example, but it's about 800 grams. So there's a massive, massive difference. If you look across Europe in general, nuclear and hydro have had a tremendous, let's say, contribution to the decarbonizing of the European energy mix. It's not true everywhere. If you take Poland and Germany to a lesser extent, you have levels of close to 1,000 grams. And the reason for that is there's a very high demand for electricity, and they don't have anything like enough renewable power, so they are using coal. And coal is growing in Europe as a result of the increased demand for electricity. So, you know, we also have to be aware, talking about policy failures, that you can't measure emissions at the tailpipe. You have to measure emissions over the life cycle. And that is one of the failures in European policy. Is it so focused on electricity that it's driving the generators to use more and more polluting feedstocks in order to get there?
Without a whole lot of consideration for the actual emissions, quantitative emissions, right? Using that exact language you just used, grams of CO2 per kilowatt.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So no, I think Europe's done some great things. It doesn't mean that there's not still a role for all energies in the energy mix, including propane and LPG. I think it's got, in France, as I mentioned, a third of the people are not having access to that clean electricity. So it's still needed.
We'd like to have a little bit of fun. We use magic, and we're going to give you a magic wand, and you get to use that magic wand for one thing that in the next year would significantly impact the conversation around climate change. How would you use that one wand?
Okay. All right. And I can't use it to create another wand? No. Okay. So I'll just stick with this one wand. Okay. I think the biggest weakness in this whole debate is lack of international cooperation on climate change. I gave the example of France, 17 grams. 17 grams per kilowatt hour is almost getting to net zero. We're nearly there. Yet, if you take European countries like France, or the UK is a good example as well, for the UK to get to net zero, it'll cost it $2 trillion. Yet the UK contributes not even 1% of global CO2 emissions. There were a couple of gas wells in Tajikistan recently that were leaking methane. And the estimate was that that methane was more than the total emissions from the UK. Now, if the UK government said, we're good, we're going to invest part of that $2 trillion, and it probably is a couple of million, to sort out that problem for Tajikistan and stop the leakage of methane, it would have a far greater impact on global climate. Because don't forget, climate doesn't respect political borders. So if the world could come together and invest in the low-hanging fruit, and there are a lot of low-hanging fruit out there, and accept that Europe and a lot of the US is actually doing very, very well in comparison, it would be far, far better that all of the effort that we put in and all of the money that we put in to get that extra little bit of carbon dioxide improvement. So, magic wand, improve international cooperation on climate.
You know, it's interesting. You're probably podcast episode 90. So that would give us 90 opportunities to use that wand. I don't really know that we have duplicated one wish yet, and that's a great use of it. Yeah. And let me ask you, as I look at you, you're the face of the Conference of Parties. You know, you or your representatives have been to most of them. You're the face of our industry to the United Nations and tying in the role of LPG with the Sustainable Development Goals. You've been the face to the World Bank. Really the three places, I think you've been the face to the IEA and IRENA on the renewable fuels. So those are all good starts, but they're just not fostering the international conversation that needs to happen. Is that what you're saying?
I think on the LPG, so my comment with the wand was much, much more generic. It's just in general, in terms of climate cooperation, it doesn't make sense for governments to invest in their own countries where their carbon dioxide emissions are already very low. They should focus on the developing world, the global south, because that's where the problems are, that's where the development opportunities are, and that's where the carbon dioxide improvement opportunities are. As far as LPG is concerned, yeah, it's a never-ending story. We're a niche fuel. We represent 2% of global primary energy. The fact is, it might be 2% of primary energy, but it's about 50% of the planet, and that's our advantage.
Excellent use of the wand. I'm so glad you did that. Our last tradition is one that may not be very applicable to you, but we'll try it and see. We love to plant a tree in a U.S. national forest in honor of your time and your expertise and just the time you've spent sharing with us. Is there a particular place in the U.S.? I know you travel here quite regularly. Is there a part of the country that you find you'd love to have a tree planted in your honor?
You know, my surname is Rockall. When I was a kid, I used to be called Rocky. That was a kind of a nickname. And so I would like the tree to be planted in the Rocky Mountains National Forest.
We can do that for you.
Thank you.
Well, James Rockall, can I thank you enough for coming from France to be with us here on Climate Week, for really mentoring us in the U.S. about, you know, things that we needed to understand about climate. You know, a decade ago, you were there to kind of help us. And I want to thank you for your leadership to the whole LPG industry across the world. The fact that you are changing lives, we talked about changing lives in Indonesia, all through the African continent. I'm sure it's more than just that. I want to thank you for your leadership and look forward to many more years with you. Thank you.
Thank you, Tucker. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to a special edition of Path to Zero with Tucker Perkins from Climate Week in New York City. If you like what you've heard, subscribe and rate us on your favorite podcast app. You can email us with questions or comments to pathtozero@propane.com.